I have been doing a series on various cultural things that have been happening. We talked about alcohol. We talked about marijuana last week, or 2 weeks ago. And I have at least two more lessons I wanted to present. This one will be on opioids. And talk about that. This one will be a little bit slightly different take than some of the other ones that we talked about in the past. Opioids are a class of drugs that were derived from a poppy that's usually referred to as the opium poppy. Opium is the original drug that was derived. But the class of drugs includes heroin, fentanyl, oxycodone, hydrocodone, codeine, morphine, and there's a long, long, long list of various opioids that are out there. Some of them actually got developed because they realized opium was very addictive, and so they were actually trying to come up with a non-addictive form of it. Oftentimes the results were things that were more addictive than before. They were actually originally developed with the idea that, what it is there's receptors that are called the opioid receptors in your brain. And they deal with the feeling of pain. And so these drugs attach themselves to the opioid receptors, and they muffle your feelings of pain. But also what comes along with them is an increased feeling of pleasure. And that's where a lot of the addiction comes at. At lower doses, one author said that lower doses opioids make you feel sleepy, but at higher doses, it can slow your breathing and your heart rate, which can lead eventually to death. And that's where the danger of these drugs basically come in, because the addiction is such that you build up a tolerance to it. Every time they take more and more and more until eventually you take to a level that it actually stops your breathing or stops your heart, slows your heart too slow. The abuse of these drugs have been rising. That's what's been causing a panic. There was a problem in the past. It was, for the most part, society looked down on it. But lately, it has been increasing again. And it's causing a difficulty. It's not as bad here in the center of the United States, but on the coast, opioid addictions have been getting quite bad. And increasing among the young people. One of the things that I found out is, about roughly a quarter of the patients prescribed for chronic pain ends up misusing them. That's a high rate. When you say one quarter of people that use it, they end up misusing it. There's been a tripling of opioid prescriptions from 1991 to 2011. Or another way to look at it, the numbers are from 76 million prescriptions to 219 million prescriptions. Now, just to put that into perspective, the population of the U.S. is 325 million. So you look at it, you say 20, in as 2011, but the population of the United States is 325 million versus 219, two-thirds. There's enough prescriptions to go for two-thirds of the population of the United States. And that becomes a problem. Why are we having so many prescriptions for this drug that's going out? Now, nobody wants to see anyone suffer in pain. And that's part of the problem that we have. People are trying to find a way to deal with pain. But it appears that the brakes aren't being applied. They know that these particular set of pain relievers are addictive. But there's also money being made. And again, we got to watch out for things that where money's involved. It's not necessarily evil drug cartels that are doing this, but there are companies making money selling these products. There are doctors who make money using these products, and it's difficult for people to say no when pain is involved. Now, the way the addiction actually ends up working, one source I found says basically more than half the risk for opioid abuse is genetic. In other words, some people can use these and it doesn't affect them. It doesn't really, they can use them and leave them. But there are other people that become very prone to be addicted. And about half the people that use it have this tendency towards wanting to use it over and over again. The feeling of pleasure that results from taking opioids can make you want to continue experiencing those feelings, which can then lead to addiction. But that's not the only problem with it. When you stop using opioids, there's a feeling of, and this is from the National Drug Health Agency. They got a fact sheet called Drug Facts. You experience restlessness, severe muscle and bone pain. Now, I want you to take note of that one because people take opioids to avoid pain. The withdrawal symptom of opioids is pain, severe pain. There's sleep problems, diarrhea, vomiting, cold flashes with goosebumps, uncontrolled leg movements, severe cravings for the drug. Results from it. And I've been told by people who have used it, I've actually talked to, unfortunately, several people, that once in withdrawal, it gets more and more severe each time they try to get off the drug, and then when they fall back into it and then try to get off again, the withdrawal symptoms are actually more severe. Each time they go through that cycle, it gets worse and worse. One writer stated, it's in the Associated Press, it said, once in withdrawal, users feel like their bones are breaking. They sweat, they get chills, they shake. The withdrawal itself doesn't kill, but if the addicts can't persevere, they often go back to heroin or whatever other drug they're using. So what ends up happening is they have a drug that's for pain. When you stop using it, it creates pain, sometimes to such a severe level that the person craves for relief and goes back to the drug again. And so an endless cycle ends up being built up. And meanwhile, sadly, money is being made off of that cycle, whether legally or illegally. You have people making money off of somebody who's stuck in this cycle of trying to relieve pain. And then a tolerance is built up, as we mentioned before. And so the person takes higher doses to reach lower highs on this drug, and that eventually leads to overdosing. One of the recent studies, one of the things that, in fact, this is what started me thinking about this whole series. One of the recent studies that came out found out that opioids actually alter the brain. That's one of the problems with it. It actually changes your brain. In fact, one article that I was reading says, we found more than 1,000 changes after exposure to opioid-like drugs, showing a global effect of these drugs on the signaling in the brain. There's tons and tons of changes that happen with long-term use. And by long-term, they mean daily for several months. structures in the brain that allow one section of the brain to communicate with other sections disappear. Losing these structures lead to troubled reasoning, thinking through problems. They can't do it anymore. Their brain's not functioning like it used to. Nearly irresistible cravings begin steering behavior. Specific triggers like old friends, familiar street corners can spur the urge to use them again, as can general life stressors. And because of widespread brain changes, those in addiction may have limited ability to resist. And here then lies the big problem. This is why people that are on heroin and other ones like this, they end up stealing and robbing people and causing all sorts of violence, is because they're not thinking other than they want the next high. They want the next relief from this. Now, one of the ones that, again, is most critical is there's a new version of this that came out. It's called fentanyl. And you probably have heard of it because it's getting mixed in with some of the other drugs. Fentanyl is 80 times more powerful than morphine. It doesn't take much to cause breathing problems and heart problems. And so it's being found mixed in with other drugs to make them more potent. But also the problem is fentanyl, it can be absorbed just through the skin. You don't have to actually ingest it. You can actually end up having it with just handling it, which makes it a difficulty for the police in trying to deal with this stuff. Now, hopefully, you know, this type of level of drug use we wouldn't have to worry about among ourselves. But it can happen. And we got to understand what's behind it, what's causing it. Last time we talked about marijuana. And one of the arguments is, well, marijuana is not a gateway drug. That's what a lot of people tell you. It's not a gateway drug. It doesn't cause other drug abuse. But that's really oversimplifying the problem. See, the same reasons a person would use marijuana becomes the same excuses they use other drugs. Everybody else is using it. Oh, just go along with the crowd. Whatever the excuse is for using marijuana, it leads to other ones. It's the same line of reasoning or lack of reasoning. Now, marijuana is usually the one that a lot of people start with, either that or alcohol, because it's easier to get a hold of, it's cheaper. And so alcohol and marijuana tend to be the initial drugs most people who are on that path start using. But it doesn't stop there. And what's worse is, especially like marijuana, it affects a person's judgment. And so when somebody pressures them to use something else, they're more likely to give in. I dealt with a boy about 2 years ago. That's exactly what happened to him. He was getting high on marijuana all the time. I kept trying to talk him out of it. Eventually, a girlfriend talked him into using heroin. And then his life just went, phew. I lost track of him for 2 years. I told my wife yesterday, it was very strange because I put a piece of his story in this sermon. And yesterday he wrote to me after 2 years of not hearing from him. Just asking, he said, I've been thinking about you a lot. And so I'm hoping he's going to reply. But I lost him for a long while because of heroin. These things are not things to ignore. One of the authors I read, a man named Russell, he said, they are easily introduced or induced into risky, impetuous, foolish behavior, such as acceptance of heroin, LSD, and other dangerous drugs, and homosexual experience, which are later then regretted. People get their minds messed up and they end up following after other things. Virtually all who become addicted to hard drugs start with marijuana, which distorts their judgments and then puts them into the drug scene. So when they say, well, is it a gateway drug? The answer is yes. But it's not just a gateway to harder drugs. Every drug ends up being a gateway to bigger sins. Or more sins, I should say. Because all sins are basically the same. When a person gets involved in drug, they start lying. That's one of the ways I spot drug users. They're compulsive liars. And it goes with the territory because they are hiding the fact that they are caught up in drugs. So they can't just, who's going to go home and say, hey, mom, dad, I got high 3 times today. They're going to hide it. And so it becomes a habit for them to lie about everything they're doing. But lying is something that every Christian is to put away. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 24. It says, put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God, has been created in the righteousness and holiness of the truth. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speaking truth with each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. We are people that are striving to say the truth. We don't lie. Lying is opposed to being a Christian. It also leads to stealing. Simple fact is, the money for drugs has to come from somewhere, and people who get high a lot don't keep jobs very well. They don't make high-paying jobs most of the time. Or if they have them, they lose them. The money has to come from somewhere, and they end up costing far more than what you can make. In the same chapter, Ephesians chapter 4, take a look at verse 28. It says, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with the one who has need. That is our goal as a Christian, to be able to earn enough that we might help those less fortunate. But drug users end up stealing. They steal from their own parents. I've talked with a kid about that. He was stealing thousands of dollars from his own parents to finance his drug habit. Did he feel guilty about it? Yeah, a little bit, but he just kept telling himself, I'm going to pay it back. I'll get myself a job and I'll earn it. Not at the rate he was going. Because drug abusers make horrible employees. They get involved in sexual sins. I know of stories of people who are convinced that to take a drug because it would make the fornication more exciting. Because it increases the level of pleasure. One boy told me that he and his girlfriend were hooked on heroin. And he didn't have another money for another fix. And his girlfriend was demanding she had to have another fix. He was so desperate, he agreed to do a homosexual act on a drug dealer just to get another fix. He wrote to me because he was disgusted. I said, we got to talk about the drug abuse. Yes, the other thing is wrong too, but let's talk about what's leading to this. It's a gateway. All these drugs are gateways to sin after sin after sin. Take a look at 1 Timothy. Chapter 1, 1 Timothy chapter 1, starting with verse 9. It says, realizing the fact that the law was not made for a righteous person, but for those who are lawless and rebellious, for the ungodly and sinners, for the unholy and profane, for those who kill their fathers or mothers, for murderers and immoral men and homosexuals and kidnappers and liars and perjurers and whatever else is contrary to sound doctrine. And I look at that list and I said, doesn't that sound like the drug scene? There's killing, there's lying, there's profanity, there's every sin you can imagine. All tied to the same problem. But there's also leading problems as well. Why drugs are sinful itself is in Galatians chapter 5. It doesn't come across clearly, or it's more of a cultural thing, I should say. But in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 19, Galatians 5 verse 19, it says, now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorceries, enmities, strife, jealousies, outbursts of angers, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarned you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. I want to focus on that word sorceries, because that's the Greek word is pharmakeia. This is the word we get pharmacy from. It's the word that's basically the Greek word for medicine, for drugs. Why is it translated as sorceries? Well, a lot of ancient acts of sorcery involved the use of drugs where the person under the influence thought they were either doing magic or magic was being done to them. In other words, it get them to the point where they're hallucinating. And then they think, ooh, kind of like voodoo. Voodoo still uses a lot of drugs. That's the type of word that we have. It's a part of the problem. It's also hinted at in Proverbs 23, which we used back when we talked about alcohol. But go back to Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23 and verse 29. Who has woes, who has sorrows, who has contentions, who has complaining, who has wounds without cause, who has redness of eyes, those who linger over wine, those who go to taste mixed wine. I want you to notice that last one, mixed wines. What it's referring to is when they add herbs to the wine to make it more potent. They had poppies back then. And if you add poppy seeds to wine, you would extract some of the opium out of it. This is what they were talking about. So is it, you know, while the Bible doesn't directly state about drugs, it's known, it's referred to, and it's not referred to in a good sense. If you look at Revelation 22, again, sounds like the drug scene. But Revelation 22, verse 15, it says, outside the church, outside of heaven, outside are the dogs and the sorcerers and the immoral persons and the murderers and the idolaters and everyone who loves and practices lying. Again, it sounds like the drug scene. You cannot get to heaven through drugs. And the reason for it is drugs ruin your judgment. We talked about that already. And the opioids change your brain. Okay, but the Bible teaches us that we need to be prepared. We need to be sober in order to be holy before God. In 1 Peter chapter 1, 1 Peter chapter 1, and starting with verse 13. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace being brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts, which were yours in your ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves, also in all your behaviors. Because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. When you ruin your judgment, we got to remember, Satan doesn't give up. Satan is looking for a way to attack us. And when we make ourselves vulnerable to attack, he's going to be there. He's going to offer sin and lead us away. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, be of sober spirit. Be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world. And as we also mentioned, drugs end up tempting you to sin in a variety of different ways. But we need to be on guard and watch the way we go. Take a look at Proverbs 4. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23 says, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the spring of life. Put away from you deceitful mouth, and put devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead. Let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your foot from evil. You cannot do that and try to get in this drug scene. It's going to pull you off the path. And a prudent man, when he sees evil, ought to get away from it. They ought to hide from it. In Proverbs 22 and in verse 3, the prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. But probably the biggest problem with drugs is it ruins your self-control. Especially the opioids. Those who are involved in it, they really have little control. They're driven by their need. Yet in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and in verse 25, everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way as not without aim, I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I preach to others, I myself will not be disqualified. Therein lies what Christianity is about. We discipline ourselves. We hold ourselves under control. It is so easy to sin. As Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1, 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7, for God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline. That's what God has led us for. Is one of those aspects is self-discipline. In Titus chapter 2, Titus chapter 2 and verse 11. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires, and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in this present age. That's what God wants from us, to be sober in our minds, to be sensible, to be self-disciplined. But of course, you get a lot of excuses. I've heard this one several times. I'm not going to get involved. I'm just going to be there with my friends. I won't use it. But drugs put you in the wrong crowd. Janeski wrote, research shows peer pressure, in other words, wanting to be a part of the crowd, is the most likely reason people start using weed. The number one reason, because everybody else is doing it. There are people out there who want to destroy others. They'll bring them down. We talked about that in adult class this morning. But take a look at Proverbs chapter 4, starting with verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not proceed in the way of the evil men. Avoid it, do not pass by it, turn away from it, pass on, for they cannot sleep unless they do evil, and they are robbed of sleep unless they make somebody stumble. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. So often people say, well, I'm not going to get involved. I'm just going to go with them a little way. They're not going to let you go until you are like them. As Paul warned in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. It says, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And in Matthew chapter 18, Jesus warns us, sometimes we have to make hard choices. Sometimes we have to do things that we really don't want to do in order to do what is right. In Matthew chapter 18, starting with verse 8, if your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. Throw it from you. It is better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have two hands or two feet and be cast into eternal fire. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and throw it away from you. It is better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be cast into the fiery hell. Jesus is not talking about self-maiming. He's talking about that there are times that you have to go to the extreme. You might have to say, I can't be your friend anymore. Even if it is your best buddy from childhood, I can't be with you. I know one boy who was dealing with another problem, and he decided, I can't have a computer. I'm getting in trouble. I'll go down to the library and use it, because if I have it by myself, I'm in trouble. Sometimes we have to go to the extreme in order to be right. And no matter how extreme it might feel, it's better than ending up in hell. Another excuse I've been told over and over again, I can quit anytime. But the very fact that they haven't and they won't tells you that that's just a lie. Even when they know it's harmful, they go right back to it. But I can quit anytime. Yeah, right. All sins are hard to stop. But think about it. When a sin alters your mind, how much harder it is to become. Then there's the excuse, well, I'm not hurting anyone. Because, well, it just the person taking the drug, right? What about your family? What about the people that you steal from? See, you're involved in a world. What about the people you lie to? You think it's just you, but you're connected to other people, and what you do affects them. And then there's always the line, well, I'm not as bad as this other person. Usually somebody who's been in drugs longer is more completely given over to it. At least I'm not like that. Not yet. But you're heading that direction. But still, when a person sins, but it says, well, I don't do it as often, or I don't do it as extreme as somebody else. Does that make it right? Morality is not measured by what other people do. Things are right or wrong. Not by how many people do it or whether somebody does it worse than you do. And then there's the line, well, nobody can help me with this problem. That's probably the biggest lie people tell themselves. Because that means they just don't even try. They give up. There is help available. When you talk about drug addictions, there are in the world recovery centers. They can help. But there's more important than anything else. There's Christ. Take a look at Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7 and verse 15. Paul says, for what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I do, am not practicing what I would like to do, but I'm doing the very thing that I hate. But if I do the very thing that I do not want to do, I agree with the law, confessing that the law is good. So now no longer am I the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For the willing is present in me, but the doing of good is not. For the good that I want, I do not do. I practice the very evil that I do not want. But if I'm doing the very thing that I do not want, I'm no longer the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me. I find then the principle that evil is present in me, the one who wants to do good. For I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law in my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin, which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will set me free from the body of this death? And here's his answer. Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Who will deliver me? Paul's answer is Christ can. The only way out of drugs is stop using it. And the one way to have the strength to stop is by completely giving your life to Christ. As Paul said in Galatians chapter 2 and in verse 20, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself up for me. There then eases the decisions. When I'm tempted to do what's wrong, here is an answer to that. I do what Christ wants because I gave my life to him. It's not what I want, not what I desire, but what Christ wants from me. And that becomes my desire. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who needs the prayers of the brethren, we offer that opportunity. If there's anyone who is not yet a child of God and would like to become one, there's no better time than right now. Why don't you come forward as we sing the song that was selected.